From NPR News, this is News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. Last night, President Bush said he approved the withdrawal of at least 21,000 U.S. troops from Iraq.
General Petraeus believes we have now reached the point where we can maintain our security gains with fewer American forces. He has recommended that we not replace about 2,200 Marines scheduled to leave Anbar province later this month. In addition, he says it will soon be possible to bring home an Army combat brigade for a total force reduction of 5,700 troops by Christmas. And he expects that by July, we will be able to reduce our troop levels in Iraq from 20 combat brigades to 15.
In a rebuttal to the president's speech, Democratic Senator Jack Reed of Rhode Island didn't sound convinced.
Tonight, a nation eager for change in Iraq heard the president speak about his plans for the future. But once again, the president failed to provide either a plan to successfully end the war or a convincing rationale to continue it.
For more on this in the week's big headlines, we've got Marcus Mabry, the international business editor for the New York Times, Clarence Page, a columnist for the Chicago Tribune, and Jonathan Hicks, a senior political reporter for the New York Times. Welcome, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Howdy.
So, Clarence, the drawdown refers only to troops in the president's surge, but he's been getting headlines all week suggesting a larger, more meaningful withdrawal, like the boys are coming home. So, from a media perspective, how do you explain exactly what's being put on the table and whether it will actually happen?
Well, this is an interesting kind of drawdown. It's not so much of a pull out as a halt to pushing in new troops. The troops that he announced, those initial units are scheduled for withdrawal anyway, but they were to be replaced by units that were standing by. Those units now will not move in. So there will be a net reduction, you could say, of our troops as a result. And so that means we have reversed the direction of moving in. So in that sense, Bush can certainly claim credit for those who want to see some pullout by saying, well, we're not putting any more in, and we have reversed that process. But we got to wait till March to see if there's really going to be any more meaningful pullout. We still got, I think, 137,000 that are supposed to be remaining.
So, Jonathan, General Petraeus, he seems to have made some headway in swaying public opinion or at least putting one version of what's going to happen in Iraq out there. Between Petraeus and Bush, what has changed this week in the game?
Well, I mean, you have General Petraeus, who's done this public relations sort of thing, and he sort of set the stage for last night's speech. The problem, as many Democrats are pointing out, is that it still leaves more than 100,000 troops over there beyond the 2009 inaugural.
Now, Marcus, what do you think the international perspective is? I was going around clicking from link to link today, and there was a fair amount of criticism from some of the European press. What sense do you get of how this is playing outside the U.S.?
Well, Farai, I think you're using very diplomatic terms when you said a fair amount of criticism. I think in Europe, as in the Middle East, as in much of the world, this administration, of course, has lost a great deal of credibility. If one compares it to 9/11 and the atmosphere, of course, which we observed again an anniversary this week, the atmosphere immediately after 9/11, this administration, which started out with a pretty rocky road with other countries on the international scene, after 9/11, America had tremendous sympathy. George Bush has steadily spent that down to the point that now the administration lacks all credibility with the international community. And they pointed out, I think, lots of the intellectual jujitsu that the president went through last night. For instance, at one point he said he portrayed Iraq as an ally that needed us, and as if this were a sovereign country that had asked us to come in originally. And so, you know, it's he is really, I think, very much convinced by his own rhetoric still. I think even many moderate Republicans in the Senate no longer are.
Well, you mentioned 9/11. Let's actually move on to the anniversary. A lot of coverage, a lot of questioning of where we've gone. And you did a story on the international response to that event. How did you frame that story at that time?
Well, you know, actually, Fry, I did ask that question. I said, we've seen this amazing outpouring for America and Americans. You know, that was right after 9/11 that Le Monde, the leading French daily, which is certainly no great pro-American venue, wrote an editorial in which they said, Tous Américains, meaning we're all Americans now. And that was extraordinary time for our nation. And I actually raised the question, would the administration now capitalize on these feelings, these positive feelings from this horribly negative, traumatic event for our nation, in order to build new bridges that actually will allow us to fight terrorists with not just guns, but also with ideas and with allies and with our ideas. And I asked that question at that point, and unfortunately, I think most of us, most critics, would look back and say that the administration has not done that.
Clarence, you were in D.C. What did you see and what did you hear in terms of public reaction on that day?
Well, that morning on September 11, I was heading downtown right after having seen both towers hit on TV. I was heading downtown so shell-shocked, you could say, by this whole thing that I was still in my head thinking about the column I had planned to write on some topic I have long since forgotten when looking across the horizon, looking toward National Airport past the Washington Monument. I saw a big cloud of smoke go up in the air, and I thought that's odd because, you know, back in Chicago, a tire fire would look like that, but this is not an industrial town, so while I was watching that, I wondered if it was connected to what was happening in New York. And then over the air, I heard on NPR Tom Gelton at the Pentagon talking about some fire alarms had just gone off over there. And from that day on, my day and my life changed, like so many other people say. In Washington, it was very strange, like something out of an old science fiction movie, because you suddenly saw all these cars heading out of town and other people heading into town, which were people like me, journalists, all trying to figure out what was going on. Of course, we later found out, there were a lot of initial false reports, like a truck bomb in front of the State Department that went out over the radio. The White House was evacuated. People running out of that place down the street, and we heard about this missing plane that was still somewhere and maybe headed toward Washington. So it was a very dramatic day, to say the least. And I did make my deadline after the first tower went down. I knew what my topic was going to be.
And Jonathan, you spoke to a lot of witnesses and survivors. Where do you draw the line between getting the story and invading their grief?
Well, one thing I was going to say about it is that most of the world has forgotten the fact that September 11th was a very big election day in New York City. And we had a huge Democratic primary and other primaries that day. And it was, you know, when we were, we had elections for mayor and all the city. It was the biggest one we've had because it was when term limits actually went into effect. So you had most of the city council and most of the city government that was going out of office, and we were electing new people. And it completely shut down that election. The election was canceled, which was a historic thing in New York. That never happened, at least not in modern times. And so what I had to do was go from reporting on the election, I was already out there, to watching people and speaking to people who had come over the Brooklyn Bridge from downtown Manhattan, who were covered with soot and dirt and debris. And ultimately, I went into one of the neighborhoods in Brooklyn where a lot of people, it was a fairly Orthodox Jewish neighborhood, where people were talking about how, for the first time, people in the United States got some sense of the terrorism that had gone on in the Middle East. And many people in New York were framing it through that prism.
I've talked to some reporters who said that they still are emotionally damaged, I guess you could say, from PTSD, from everything that they saw. Did you have to process some of the things that you saw and just sort of the secondary grief of all the people you spoke with?
Yes. I mean, there were, it was a very surreal experience, and part of it was that no one knew what the end of it was going to be. I mean, you saw the two buildings, but there were a number of aircraft, military aircraft that were going over, you know, flying around New York subsequent to that. But no one knew exactly what was going on or how long it was going to last. And it was a very interesting thing because many of the churches had almost spontaneous church services that evening and in the following days, following that Tuesday. people sort of gravitated toward their houses of worship. And it did, because most everyone, at least in New York City, a city of 8-point-some million people, knew someone who at least knew someone who had been affected, killed in the Twin Towers. Everyone, there were firemen from the neighborhood fire departments. There, everyone knew somebody in some way or another, it seems, that was affected by that. And so it was a trauma for the entire city.
Just very briefly, Marcus, what's going to happen with these anniversaries? Are these September 11th anniversaries going to continue to mark moments of reflection for this country, or will this fade?
I think they'll always mark moments of reflection, but I think Americans will reflect in different ways, in the same way I think that the Pearl Harbor generation would reflect on that anniversary in their lifetimes in different ways, those who have been alive when that happened. So I think we will still mourn, each of us, certainly in New York, of course, in Washington, in Pennsylvania, we'll mourn. But I think we may increasingly mourn as individuals and as families and as individual Americans rather than as a nation. And some of that, I think, is all to the good, because that's what wounds do as they heal.
Well, gentlemen, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Farai.
Marcus Mabry is the international business editor for the New York Times. Clarence Page is a columnist for the Chicago Tribune. And Jonathan Hicks is a senior political reporter for the New York Times.